It's 9:30 on a Thursday here on the Sports Ticket, and that means it's time to talk to the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or give them a call, 738-5701. Brian, I must say, I think there are a few people out there that feel, this sounds crazy to say, because I know you enjoy your job tremendously, but there were a few people that listened to you on a regular basis out here on our station that texted me and said, I kind of feel sorry for Brian today after the rough loss that KU had against Texas Tech. Blowouts are never easy to call, no matter at what level.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I appreciate the folks that texted that. That was tough, because I think we all have higher expectations, and I think that even in the midst of a losing streak now, that nobody around here saw it coming. We really thought we would win one of those two MAC conference non-con games, and thought we'd win one of the two home games back-to-back to open league play. And so there's been some disappointment, certainly, but I'll tell you what, my resolve and belief in the leadership of our program is still where it was 5 weeks ago, and it's just a situation where, quite frankly, at certain spots, Jayhawks are learning on the job and growing up, and growing pains come with that. So clearly, like West Virginia, they had that deficit whittled down within striking distance, but then the wheels fell off after that 20-yard fumble recovery for a touchdown by Justice Barker off the Chase Harrell fumble. It was reminiscent of 2 weeks earlier when Kansas took that 3- or 4-score deficit, got it all the way down to 8 on 2 junctures, but then just couldn't quite finish the deal and had it really slip away in blowout fashion in the 4th quarter. As David Beatty said, it's a team that's still learning how to play 60 minutes right now. And the problem has been, for the most part, Wade, the first 15 and the last 15. Yeah. It's a club that, as we've talked about every week, has gotten off to these slow starts where they dig a big hole. And in the case of last Saturday, 21-0, you know, and if they can, here we go again. But there were some signs of life from the defense. There were clearly some encouraging signs from Dorrance Armstrong, more so than we'd seen all season. And I think that in a new-look secondary that we kind of hinted would be coming on last week's report, you did see some individual improvement. And I realize your listeners, our fans, they're not tuning in on Thursdays at 9:30 or showing up on Saturdays at 11 to see individual progress at the nickelback spot or whatever the case might be. They want to see wins. I get it. And we're starved for those, certainly. But when you have a situation like this one where they really are so inexperienced in some of the most important spots, it was great to see a little bit of progress, and you hope that that turns into something that later in the season, maybe as soon as this week, is more tangible in the win column. But as I said on last week's report, I don't think any of us truly estimated with accuracy what the loss of those three senior starters in the secondary would mean. And the fact that they were still shuffling the deck during the bye week and moving three different positions out of five in the secondary around with new starters and trying guys out in new roles just shows how much they're still trying to replace the likes of Tevin Shaw and Fish Smithson, obviously, and Brandon Stewart. And so, you know, it's not just the secondary. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, the quarterback play at times has been not as consistent as we would like. But it's a club that I don't feel is as far away as that final 46-point margin would indicate. It's a club that, in a lot of these games, have had tipping points that time and time again have gone against them. And as we talk about, as cliche as it sounds, you know, teams that are young and figuring out how to win at the major conference level, they got to learn how to close the deal and get over that hump and sometimes play out in front so you're not behind the eight ball or behind the 21 points like it seems like it's been most weeks. And as they mature and grow, hopefully they'll put themselves in a better position. This is a game this week that, despite the fact that Iowa State looked so amazing at Oklahoma and is the national team of the week, it's still a game that I feel is in KU's wheelhouse as a possibility. And at the start of the season, I would have told you most all the games were. The way that things have gone in recent weeks, maybe that's not where most folks would stand right now. But I, for one, believe in this staff, and I know they're plugging hard. And I'll tell you this much. I can't promise you what's going to happen in terms of points scored and final margin and all that comes on Saturday. But I am around these guys enough to know that at least 6 weeks in, this team will still run through the wall for its coaches. They are still bought in, dialed in, focused, determined. And some of the guys that were some of the more ballyhooed and hyped players in the preseason, caught like it is, Wade, they're ticked off. I mean, they're frustrated. You know, they don't like what's being written or said. They don't like the fact that things haven't gone like many hoped they would. And so it's definitely not a group that has broken spirits by any means. They are certainly focused and have that arrow pointing upward. It just hasn't come together and materialized in the win column like we all thought it would by now. And so for that, I'm sorry if I'm spreading false hope on some of these Thursday reports, but as Coach Beatty says, we all do believe in the plan, and I believe in the kids we got because I see how hard they're trying. But there's just clearly some overmatched spots right now where the experience needs to catch up to the potential. And until it does, there could be games like last Saturday where things slip away because you're not quite there yet in closing out opponents and playing the full four quarters to the level they'll need to.
You know, the defense has caught in a lot of heat. It has not performed very well. It's the last in a lot of statistical categories in the Big 12. But I want to go back to the way this game started. Texas Tech runs right down the field and they score. And then KU's offense has the ball. Fourth and one, they don't convert. I wasn't a big fan of the play. I'll be honest. I was not a big fan of the play call before. I mean, I'll get to that in a moment. Anyway, then they give up the touchdown down 14-0, come back down, another fourth down and one play. And they run a stretch play, and they get knocked out of bounds a yard shy of the first down. And then the defense gives up another touchdown, and boom, it's 21-0 right there. I want to ask you this question, it's something I'm seeing at a lot of levels nowadays, and I have a lot of people that are with me on this side of the bandwagon, and that is, and this isn't an indictment of KU's coaching staff, I think it's really more of a criticism of a lot of coaching staffs out there, because we've gone to the spread look, we've gone into the pistol, the shotgun formation, but whatever happened to just getting under center and doing a quarterback sneak on fourth and about 3 inches, which is what KU had in that first fourth down and one, instead they line up in the pistol, run an off-tackle play, and then the second time they have a chance to kind of redeem themselves, and they run a stretch play to the far side of the field. And yes, I understand hindsight's 20/20, and if they pick it up, it looks great, and the players didn't execute the play that they wanted to run. That's part of it. And I know that if they run up the middle, fullback dive, or if they do a quarterback sneak and they don't get it, people are going to say, well, you dummy, you should have run wide right and left and whatever else. But I've been seeing that more and more, and the excuse I've heard from a few people, and I really – I just think it's a weak excuse, and that is, well, you know, they're just not used to taking the ball from center. If you played quarterback this many years and you've gotten this point in your career and you don't know how to get a snap from center, and a center doesn't know how to snap it to you when they're actually under the center's butt, I don't know what else I can tell you on that one. I would have to say the better excuse would be, we just simply like that look better, that play better, that's why we run it. But do you understand where I'm coming from there, and a lot of fans too?
Sure.
Why wouldn't you, when you only have a few inches, you just have to tap the center on the rear, you give them a silent signal or count, whatever it might be, and you just go. And, I mean, I think you can pick up 3 inches. And if you can't, fourth and 3 inches on a quarterback sneak, then, well, you don't deserve to have the ball anyway.
Yeah, I think it makes good points. And regardless of what team, what personnel, what matchup we're talking about, I've never been a fan of the stretch play. When you just need 3 inches vertically, why are you going to run 30 feet
yes.
laterally to try and get your shoulder square, get to the corner, and then go forward? It just seems like you're giving the defense a lot of time to get in position. But
there's also a good chance for a hold, too. When you go wide, there's a better chance for holding, too.
It's true. But, you know, regardless of what they were thinking in that instance, and for the record, I think that a lot of us, you know, in looking where Khalil was at on that first fourth and short they didn't pick up,
mm-hmm.
we didn't have the camera angle to prove it because bodies were piled up on yep. top of players and on top of the football, and you couldn't truly see it. But I think we all believe that based on where his torso was at, where the ball should be underneath that pile, he got it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to trust Doug Meacham that's not just in knowing his personnel, but in knowing what the defense is allowing them, what they're going to show and what they're going to present, that they put KU in the highest percentage chance possible. But I get where you're coming from. I mean, that's as elementary as football gets, the center to quarterback exchange and just pushing forward. I understand it. But I will say this, and I am privy to how much goes into game planning and how much opponent scout work they do. And I think it was not on display any better than we've seen to this point than what we saw on the opening drive versus West Virginia, where they knew right where to run the ball, who was exploitable, where they had an edge. And you saw 14 straight run plays from a team that, you know, 2 weeks earlier had passed it 62 times, you know, and so. I think they clearly have a handle on things, but there were instances a couple of times over early in the game where they didn't quite get the execution, and you wonder what would have happened had they been able to sustain those drives.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, wait, we could say that about the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, a promising drive that got to midfield or the opponent 45 and then fizzled, and then here comes the landslide of the 18, 21, 25-point hole.
Yeah.
And, again, we're not going to play ifs, buts, candy, and nuts. But the point is, they've been so close, you just wonder if this team could get something good to go for them at the start of the game, what kind of dividends that might pay throughout so that you don't get into these extended valleys and you have a few more peaks. Because every single week, you know, it's been close, but not good enough. And obviously, we're not in the business of close nuts, horseshoes, and hand grenades, right?
Yeah.
So got to find a way to finish it, and hopefully this is the week. But, you know, we'll dive into the Iowa State matchup here in a second. We can talk specifics there. But I do think there are some areas in which Kansas matches up well this week to give me hope. And I think there's one glaring area where they don't. So maybe we can get into that here shortly.
Yeah, we will here in just a moment. Brian Haney, his appearance brought to you every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by, see Matt. You know he's a big Jayhawk fan. And Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. Okay, the quarterback situation. You've heard the old moniker. If you can't settle on one and you have a two-quarterback system, then you really don't have one good quarterback is the moniker. Peyton Bender looked promising before the year, getting into the season, put up some good numbers, but he did not play very well against Texas Tech. Carter Stanley had an opportunity to play, and David Beatty said it's going to be a competition. What can you tell us more about that situation going into Saturday?
Well, first off, sorry for the barking dog. He's fired up about this quarterback competition.
He's mad at 4th-and-1 just like me. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. But no, it's a situation where I think not much is going to change, Wade. I think that if you ask me today, it would be my expectation that Peyton starts the game, but we see Carter early within it. Again, you'd love to settle on one guy. You'd love to be completing more drives than you're punting and have some kind of rhythm and have momentum in that regard. But I think this staff still feels like Peyton gives them the best chance to win based on some of the throws he's capable of making. But this staff is still not satisfied with what's become kind of a one-dimensional Peyton Bender that's not taking off to run and creating more with his feet when things don't immediately open up downfield. Clearly there have been instances where he hangs onto the ball too long, and we see what happens in those occasions. So, Carter, I'm a big fan of Carter Stanley. I love the kid. I think he's moxie, his leadership. He's a much more vocal guy than Peyton is, and I don't mean that to be a criticism of Peyton, but I just watch him on the sidelines, the way he fires up his teammates, and I love the demeanor with which he leads, whether he's in the game or not. And I think he can definitely provide a spark. Over an extended stretch of time in the second half last week, it wasn't as sustained as I think they would have liked to have seen. And that's, again, not an indictment of him. He's still shaking off the rust and getting his first, you know, extended action of the season. But I don't think they saw enough as of Saturday completely flip the script and say, okay, he's the starter going forward. Now, the last time I talked to any coaches about this was on Tuesday. Things could have materialized in the last couple of days. We'll see. But it would be my expectation that you would continue to see both quarterbacks. And unless something changed over the practice week, I think number 7, Peyton Bender will likely start the game as he has been. And Carter will come in, not just for running packages, but they'll use him to throw too. But regardless, no matter whether it's Peyton Bender, Carter Stanley, or Wade Gerstner, we need consistency, sustained momentum, not just on one drive, but stringing them back-to-back. It goes for all aspects of this football team right now. In every phase of the game, there's just been a lot of ups and downs and inconsistencies. The first guy that can grab the bull by the horns and put together back-to-back-to-back drives, I think has a chance to take this job and run with it for a while, because he just haven't been able to maintain and sustain. And I think that's the big key when you go up to Iowa State, taking on a fired-up group of Cyclones that have all the momentum in the world right now and are feeling pretty good about life as America's team of the week.
Yeah, and that's what I want to get to next. I mean, you know, if you're going to catch a team, this might be the perfect time to catch Iowa State, because they probably are reading their press clippings a little bit. And we know that when a team that isn't used to winning big games like that, many times they're not used to handling it, and thus they have a great week and they celebrate a little bit too long, and the next week they lay an egg. That happens many times. Now, the difference here is Iowa State will be at home. That's an advantage for them. And you also look at Iowa State. I think a lot of people look at KU and Iowa State, and they're two different situations, and Matt Campbell certainly inherited a better situation than David Beatty did. There's no question about that. But I think there's some KU fans that look and go, wow, Iowa State got that marquee win. Iowa State is going in the right direction. They're showing progress. And that's what, you know, KU wants to get to. They want to get to the situation where, you know, it sounds crazy. It's, you can't just go from being Kansas football right now to immediately Oklahoma football. You're going to have to work your way up. And so the next step to me would be, we want to be where Iowa State is. You know, a team that can compete, that's close in many games, that has a winning record right now. And then, of all places, they go to Norman and they win and get that marquee win. And the line on this game is 21.5. Iowa State's a 21.5 point favorite, which is just amazing. Nobody would have probably had that on the books as of a few weeks ago. So is this a good time, perhaps, for KU to catch Iowa State?
And I hope so, but I'm not convinced it is either, because I talked with the voice of the Cyclones, John Walters, earlier this week, and I was talking to him about how when Central Michigan came into Lawrence and beat KU, the postgame show in the booth to my right hadn't been started for more than 2 minutes, and they already had like 3 Bud Lights cracked open. And they're drinking beer Harry Carey style, toast of the team, going nuts in the CMU booth. Which, you know, at that point, David and I just kind of tip our caps to them. Congratulations, guys. You deserve it, whatever.
Right.
And, hey, there was some champagne in the Jayhawk Network suite about an hour after we signed off the air following the Texas game, full disclosure, a year ago. But my point is, I tell all this, I said, what was that like, man? You're sitting there at Oklahoma Memorial Stadium, you just beat the number 3 team in the country. You beat the Heisman Trophy favorite. You know, what are you thinking, you know? And then I said, more specifically, what was that plane flight home like? I bet that was one big party. Because anybody that gets to travel, you know, with some of these D1 schools, when you get that monumental win, it is pretty fun to be around the kids. And I think for me, going to Texas Tech for 4 years and, you know, a place where you don't necessarily always expect to win on the road and have happy flights coming home, those were the best when you won unexpectedly.
Yeah.
At Kansas, it's kind of the expectation for hoops. So it's a little more, okay, well, we did what we were supposed to do. But I asked Walter specifically, I said, man, was that some kind of party or what? And he said, actually, Coach Campbell got up and said, hey, guys, like, I'm so proud of you, but don't let this moment be the pinnacle of your season. Let's use this to do things even bigger and be remembered for our total body of work and this breakthrough year that we had, not one signature week that we had. And I'm thinking, dang, man, this guy's my age. He's Wade's age. He's like 37 years old, and he's got the wisdom of a coach, you know, 3 decades deeper. So I think from a leadership standpoint, they have really tried to keep the guys humble. Now, having said that, I'm sure, as my broadcast partner David Lawrence would say, I'm sure their girlfriends have been telling them how great they are all year, all week, and patting them on the back and just telling them, you know, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And so maybe there is a little bit of fat and happy there, but I think fat and happy goes to the wayside when you've got great execution, terrific fundamentals, and some talent that I'm not sure they get credit for what they're trotting out there. If you're just saying, okay, it's Iowa State, they were picked 8th in the preseason, 10 Big 12 teams, that they're probably a back-end type team, watch the film, okay? Here's the matchup that scares me, and okay, this is not meant to be critical of our players at all, because I just watched this particular position group manhandle Oklahoma, so I think they could do it to anybody. And this is, to me, where we have to see some of the best performances of these young Jayhawks' careers. Their receivers versus our secondary. Alan Lazard's a preseason All-American. He stands in at 6'5". Hakeem Butler stands in at 6'6". They worked these guys over from Oklahoma. They're blocking on the edge, freed it up for the smaller little guys, the Wes Welker types like Trevor Ryan, to bust it down the sideline. They jumped over guys, ran around guys. I mean, I'm not trying to say that they're, you know, the greatest receiving corps in the league or anything like that. It's not Baylor from 3 or 4 years ago. But for them to go into Oklahoma's house and do that to the Oklahoma DBs, when you then talk about how young this position is, it's a little bit difficult to imagine, you know, Kansas having a push in that category.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a decided advantage based on our inexperience, their size, and what they bring to the table. And that's not being a Debbie Downer. I'm just saying that's where Kansas has to overachieve. And how do you do that? It's not just the 4 or 5 guys in the back, as we talked about. It's the 4 guys in the front, man. Get to Kyle Kemp, the senior walk-on quarterback. Knock him on his tail. Don't give him time to pick you apart downfield. Don't give the receivers a ton of extra time to get separation, because they're going to lob it up. And these 6'5", 6'6", guys that could be playing, you know, on the basketball court at the Hilton, They're going to be winning a lot of jump balls. They're going to do that all year. And so I think if Dorrance can build off the performance he had on Saturday, Daniel Wise as well, you've got a chance to help those guys out in the back, because that, to me, is the glaring matchup differential that could really tilt the scales ISU's way. Joel Lanning's a great story. I think it's kind of like Kerry Meyer, man. You don't get to play the role that you set out to fill at your respective school, but you love that program, your teammates, your coach so much, you say, hey, give me whatever role I can take on to stay on the field and help my guys win, I'll take it. So he loses out on the quarterback job, becomes a linebacker, puts on a little extra weight, and next thing you know, because of Jacob Park's leave of absence from the team, he's playing 13 snaps on offense, 8 snaps on special teams, 57 snaps on defense. He's a National Defensive Player of the Week. He's a three-way player, and he did it because he had a good attitude, that he wanted to support the team however he could still pitch in and help out. How many guys in this day and age of college football, as soon as they lose the cool quarterback job, the QB1 position, they're looking to transfer? I mean, it's just what you do now, right?
Yeah.
You find a greener pasture where you've got an easier path to be the QB1. And he said, no, I love this place. And consequently, he's playing on the team of the week as a National Player of the Week. And you know what? I'm clearly cheering for the Crimson and Blue, but that's a guy I could get behind and cheer for any other week, because I think they're a very Kerry Meyer-like selflessness type attributes from a Joel Lanning story this season. And that's going to be a tough one, too, right in the middle of that defense, man. He's proven he is clearly every bit as good at linebacker as we saw at quarterback the last few years.
KU at Iowa State this Saturday, kickoff at 11 a.m. You can hear it on our sister station. You're home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas, Z96.3 The Lake. All right, time for off-the-wall question. And that question for you today, Mr. Haney, is who was your celebrity childhood crush? For me, Alyssa Milano, hands down. Who's the boss? I mean, I think I still have a crush on her. To be quite honest, my wife's not listening, but I'm probably okay there, because I know she has a crush on Matt Damon, so it's all good. But your celebrity childhood crush, buddy?
Man, I hate to be unoriginal, but we are cut from the same cloth. I loved Alyssa Milano. Oh. I totally thought she hung the moon on Who's the Boss and several shows after that. I thought she was the best. But I guess to give you something different, since, American teenagers going through puberty probably aren't limited to just one crush. I did watch a lot of tennis back in the day. I played tennis when I was in my high school years. And at the time, there was an American tennis player named Jennifer Capriati.
Yes.
And I thought she was pretty hot. Now, she ended up having some issues off the court, which maybe took some shine off that apple a little bit. But I think she was in her prime for a, circa 1994 freshman in high school, Brian Haney. She was quite the apple of my eye, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I think there's probably a lot of people would say Anna Kournikova. She came obviously later than Capriati, but that's a blast from the past. Jennifer Capriati, I think she was professional at the age of 13 or 14, was playing in majors. So,
very
talented.
And then there was Annika Sorenstam, if you like to watch golfers.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We probably should stop there.
We could go on a while, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could. I don't want to get too descriptive on why we had crushes, but that's a fun question, my man.
Well, Who's the Boss was a great show. Anyway, Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, so you can hear him again on Saturday on Z96.3. Brian, always enjoy it, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Let's talk about a huge, huge road win where Kansas steals the headlines 1 week after Iowa State did, all right? We'll talk to you then.
Sounds like a plan. Take care. That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you as always every week on a Thursday at 9:30 by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.